Hey guys, it's your favorite sisters with the Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver show on UK Health Radio. On the show, you'll hear caregivers confessing the good, the bad, and the completely unexpected. You're guaranteed to relate, be inspired, leave with helpful tips and resources, and of course, laugh. Now, let's jump right in to today's guest confession. Hey, Jay.
Hi, Natalie.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm delightful. And how are you?
You know, I'm just swimming right along. I am here with my bestie who I've met and who actually came to the Caregivers Playbook series that we have. And that's how we became best friends. Not in an airport, not randomly on the street, came to a training that we did and shared a lot of our experience. And she has resources. And so this is going to be jam-packed. And Donna has been my best friend for months.
I need to say this something, Donna. If you could just tell her she's not your best friend, but if you could be best friends with me,
no.
Because she steals all my friends, all of them. She says, you're my best friend.
And today's her birthday, Donna. So JJ has no friends.
See, Donna's
on her
my best friend.
JJ, my birthday is on Thursday.
She's an August baby.
Yes.
Oh,
thank you.
You're going to have to read the newsletter because the August newsletter JJ wrote, which was great. I mean, even though I harass her, she's a really great writer. And so we are family. Our family, our extended family is a month of August babies. And so there's photos of the merry-go-round and it was the Merida bread truck merry-go-round. And we were riding horses when we were little. But we've got birthdays on 5, 6, 8, 9, 11, 15. It's crazy. 2 on 15.
Yeah. August is our month, Donna. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Donna so we can get started on this now. Because like you said, she's got
do what you want
of resources. Back off, it's my birthday. Okay. Give me some candles. All right, guys, today we have with us Donna Stagletter. And guys, she has a long history in the medical field and human resources, but her caregiving history, I feel like right now that's taken her down a completely different path in life. And she's got a lot of stuff to share with us. She's cared for her first child, Sarah, a spouse, her mother, and currently her father. And she is an amazing advocate, and she's on a mission to change the caregiving landscape. She's got a website that has all kinds of resources, and she's also got a focus on, I think, faith and how the church should come in and really help people that are ailing and are in need of care. So, Donna, we are so happy to have you here with us today.
Yay!
Thank you very much.
Well, and it's so funny because I was telling Donna, Jay, when we started, and so for our listeners out there, I was telling Donna that, you know, normally I start from the beginning, but the reality is Donna has so much care. I even said, and Donna, spoiler alert, is a registered nurse. So she's an RN, she's worked in the healthcare field. And so I use the word episodic. She's had very numerous episodes of caregiving. And I really want to make sure that we have that time to talk about those experiences, what she learned from it and build on it. So I'm going to start a little bit different. I'm going to ask Donna to give us your background, and then let's talk about where care really started entering, because care entered your world early on. And you've been caring for people both as a paid and unpaid family caregiver, feels like your whole life. So why don't you give us some backstory?
Oh, I would say I have been caring for people all my life. As a child, I wanted to be a nurse. And my cousins even started using me to be a nurse before I was ever trained. So I started, I was raised in Southwest Virginia, close to where you guys are, in a little place called Henry, Virginia, Franklin County, Moonshine Capital of the World. I had two brothers and my parents, and the whole community was all related to one another. So we all knew one another.
That's
I went
right.
to school, nursing school at, it was Carilion Hospital now. It was Roanoke Memorial Hospital then. Got my diploma, then moved on to MCV Hospital then, which is now VCU Health System now. Once I graduated from there, I went into a small hospital called Metropolitan Hospital, and that place taught me everything. One of those jobs where I was the jack of all trades, learned background in all types of nursing care. And I believe going through that process, being exposed to all of those types of nursing, God had a pathway for me to create a way of learning a lot of different, being exposed to a lot of different nursing types of ways in preparing me for what was to come in my life. Through that process, I also became an EMT working for a rescue squad. And that's where I met my first husband. He was looking for a wife, called in, looking for someone to marry. Turned out we were on the same rescue squad.
Terribly convenient. I'm going to tell you right now, that's terribly convenient.
It was terribly convenient. Also, I don't believe in coincidences.
Right.
I married him, had my first child, Sarah. Sarah had let's say she had a medical condition that I recognized, but in those days, children were not recognized as having mental health problems. But because of my nursing degree, because of my nursing background, I saw that she had mental health problems. The family did not want me to see that, and so therefore refused to have care for her. But I knew about it. I recognized it. And so I treated her throughout her life for the medical condition she had. It was very difficult, very challenging. But I gave her the resources through me that she needed and got her the help that she needed. And even at one point, go ahead.
No, and I'm totally an interrupting cow, and I apologize for that. You know, I know that I'm looking at some of my notes. I know that you taught that she was identified as a failure to thrive. I'm really glad that you mentioned that because your care started early with her.
It did. At 3 years old. At 3 years old, she developed her mental health condition more so than the failure to thrive. She was never actually diagnosed with failure to thrive, but I recognized that was a part of her problem. She had other medical conditions that were there that we never got diagnosed, but contributed to the mental health problems. But at 3 years old, she developed the signs that she had. She ended up with a mental health condition of obsessive compulsive disorder, a primary phobia, and a pseudo maturity problem that from 3 years old on through her rest of her life, she's had to cope with. And it was only because I helped her identify that and help get her treatment that she managed to grow and develop. She's now a registered nurse. She got through nursing school. She had to leave nursing because of her own two children who are now autistic. She is at home. She is raising them herself at home, special needs children, teaching them herself. She is awesome. And she has developed some own additional medical problems, but she is thriving and able to manage on her own. And again, she's just been phenomenal.
Yeah, you know, and I think this is so important, Donna, because I think when people think of a mental health diagnosis, especially something like an obsessive compulsive disorder, I know that she had some anxiety. She was you mentioned that she was anxious. She had sleep issues. And you think about how those chronic persistent types of symptoms can have a negative impact on your overall physical health, as well as your mental health. You know, for her to be able to thrive and do well really is a testament to your commitment to working with her. But you also mentioned that your husband at the time was not supportive of seeking out care for her in that type of care. Cause I want to be very clear. Right. He wasn't saying she didn't deserve medical care, but there's a lot of stigma around mental health.
Absolutely.
And I can imagine. So what that was like for you.
Yeah. He did not want her to be labeled as having a mental health problem.
Yeah.
He was very concerned that she would get a label and would be, the labels that came with the terms of mental health at that point. But
absolutely.
One day when she was 8, she pulled a knife out of the drawer and put it to her wrist and said, I don't want to live like this anymore. And at that point, I said, I don't care what you do. I don't care if you leave me or what you're going to do. She's going into treatment.
Yeah.
And that's when I saw a counselor and got her on medication. Because at that point, it didn't matter what she got labeled or not to me.
Yeah. I can only imagine that being really stressful.
It was extremely stressful because her school would call me every day. She was crawling under the table, hiding and afraid to come out. And the school nurse would call me and say, please talk her out.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
It was terrible for her. She had a terrible, terrible time trying to cope until I was able to get her to do some treatment.
Well, and you know, I know that you said that in your also that you ultimately got divorced from him. Was it, do you think it was that misalignment of not that led to strife and really kind of led you down a different path? Because it's not uncommon.
A lot of it did. It wasn't just that, it was other things, but for a long time, he believed that she was faking it and did not really believe that she had the severity of her condition that she had. And he felt that I was coddling her. That a lot of the things that she was saying that she had as problems, that she was just looking for attention. But her condition created a lot of dysfunction in our family. And our son did not get the attention he needed because I had to spend so much time with her. So we had a lot of dysfunction as a result of it. It was very difficult because he really didn't support us. And so it was, and our pediatrician did not support us. He did not believe that she had a problem. He felt that I needed to be more strict in making her face her phobia and didn't go along with the issues that she had. Because, again, children did not have mental health problems in that era of time.
That goes back to a behavioral model for those social workers and people who've worked in the field. It's a behavioral mindset versus trauma-informed kind of mindset. Yeah. Jay?
But I just think it's so interesting to see, even back then, you know, however many years it was ago, Donna, when caregivers are actually having to fight for care.
Yeah.
And without you advocating, you know, you're advocating then and probably not even recognizing it yourself, you know, that that was even the word.
Yeah. Oh, I knew I was fighting. I've been fighting healthcare since the beginning.
Well, and it's, and, you know, and I think, you know, I think if we're just honest about it, it's also you're a woman, but you're an educated woman at the time. If we think back to probably how old's your daughter now? I'm going to date you a little bit.
She is almost 40.
Yeah. So if you think about 40 years ago and you think about, you know, the voices and women having more voice in care, I mean, we already struggle enough already when we go to the physicians. We did a Dr. Maytal and I did a training on caregivers as part of the medical team at an APOS conference. And it was interesting because we talk about the wallpaper phenomenon and about how caregivers can end up being like the wallpaper in the room and they're not, they don't come to the forefront. And so Dawn, I'm sure that you've experienced that a number of times and you're in the medical profession. So I think that's really important.
Absolutely. Sometimes they try to make me be the wallpaper, but I've learned how not to be.
Yeah. You're like, I'm not getting sticky today, people. I'm not getting sticky. You know what? This is a perfect break because we're going to jump into the next caregiving. This is, I'm telling you people, she has got jam-packed care, but I'm going to take a break real quick so our sponsors don't get mad at us and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
All right, everybody, we are back here with Donna Stagletter. So we've gone through care of her daughter, Sarah, who is doing well now, and we're so glad for that. You are a single mom. You are working, and but you do, you know, I hear this, you are working, first of all, as, you know, you, but you come into another stage in life. Let's talk about that and your next caregiving. As Natalie says, you know, you're, I guess, the layer. I'm seeing you as like this layer cake, but these layers are weighing you down. You're kind of like an apple stack cake.
Right.
But tell me about your next, how life progresses.
Right. Well, after I got divorced, I was working as actually two jobs, very busy, taking care of Sarah, managing everything that was going on. And my friends at work encouraged me to answer a personal ad, and I did. And that's how I met my second husband. Started dating, got married. Okay. And so first 8 years, didn't really notice anything, but he had told me that his father had died of MS. So I knew he had a medical background, that could lead to multiple sclerosis eventually. He said he is a total denial person, wears red, you know, the rose colored glasses, everything's always good and magical thinking. He never noticed that he had any MS symptoms. I noticed he had MS symptoms shortly after we got married. And I identified that to him and I said, you know, have you talked to your doctor about the fact that you got foot drop? Have you talked to your doctor about the fact that you stumble a lot? Oh, no, no, that's not anything related to MS. I don't have MS. He had MS, surely. I knew he did. But he was in total denial. By that point, Sarah had also graduated from nursing school. And she said to me one afternoon, because she was still living at home, Mom, you know that Lynn's got MS. And I said, oh, he absolutely does. But there's no way that he's ready to recognize that yet. And so I said, we're just going to have to wait until he's ready. Well, one night I walked into the bedroom and he had his two hands pointed at each other. And he was wiggling both sets of fingers, except one set of fingers was going much slower than the other. And so, what's that? What are you doing? And he said, well, I was just testing my hands. And I said, well, one set of fingers are significantly slower than the other. And he said, I said, what's that about? And I said, how long has that been going on? And he said, oh, it's going on for a while. I said, well, you've got a problem and we need to talk about it. And he said, oh, well, no, we don't. I said, oh, yes, we do. And I said, when's your next doctor's appointment? And he said, well, I said, we're going to the cardiologist tomorrow. I said, while we're there, we need to talk about that. I said, I knew I couldn't mention anything about MS. I said, you've got a slipped disc somewhere and it's affecting the upper part of your body. We need to go talk to somebody about this slipped disc.
Okay. That's nice. I like that. It's not a white lie because it still could be a true statement.
It's a neuro something somewhere, but it's not MS.
Yeah.
So I said, we're going to go talk to the cardiologist tomorrow while we're there. We'll mention it and see what he might think. Okay. He always had me go with him to his cardiology appointments because he had a mitral valve prolapse and he's scared to death of his heart problems. So I always went with that. He was okay with that. So while we were there at the cardiologist's appointment, at the end of it, being that I worked at MCV, been working there for many years, I had friends everywhere there.
Right.
Because I was in a high position at MCV and I knew everybody. So while I was there, finished the cardiology appointment and Dr. V said, everything okay? I said, everything's fine with his heart, but he has this problem going on with his hands. He needs to see a neurosurgeon because he might have a slip disc. I knew he did not need a neurosurgeon, but I needed to get him into neurology somewhere. I said, can you get him an appointment with Dr. So-and-so? He said, oh, yeah. And Lynn's sitting there going, what are you doing? Yeah. And he said, I don't need to see you either. And I told Dr. V the symptoms. I would say, oh, yeah, you need to go see so-and-so. And he picked up the phone, called him, got an appointment for the next day. And when we walked out of there, he says, what did you just do? I said, you need to see someone about the fingers. And we're going to take care of it now.
How old was he at the time, Donna?
Oh, he was probably at that point, he was probably in his 40s.
I don't know about how you felt about that.
Well, I knew his dad died when he was 49.
Mm.
And I knew he was in total denial. And he wasn't going to do anything about it. And it was ridiculous. So we went to see the guy, the neurosurgeon guy. He listened to him, talked to him. He says, you got MS.
Oh.
No. He said, okay. He said, let's do some pictures. I'm pretty sure, but let's do some pictures to confirm it. Set him up for the MRI. He said, you really need neurology. You don't need me. He said, I don't think this is a disc, but we'll rule it out. Let's do the MS. He picked up right away on the denial piece. And I'm looking at him going, yeah, winking at him and stuff.
Donna's winking for our listeners.
I'm staying behind Lynn going, hit thumbs up and stuff. You know what's going on here. So we're sitting at the MRI. He put him over to the neurologist, who happens to be down the hallway, called in the neurologist and said, hey, let me introduce you to Lynn. This is a friend of Donna's. He's her husband, blah, blah, blah. Again, because I know everybody, pull him in. Let's get it going. Thank God I work there. And in fact, I'm sure God set this all up. Pull him in, set it all up, got the MRI going, and the neurologist set him up for a lumbar puncture. Mm-hmm. So we had it all set up, and Lynn's, again, looking at me like he could shoot nails at me. So we set it up, got the MRI set up, got the lumbar puncture set up, and it was right at the time of our annual anniversary trip. Got it all set up, and we had the lumbar puncture done, had the MRI done, went on our annual anniversary trip. On the annual anniversary trip, I mean, gosh, there was no way he could keep denying it. It was one of those elephant in the room trips,
Yeah.
He would go fishing. By the end of the day, he was walking bent over at a 90-degree angle. He was so bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's just no way, in my mind, you could deny it. And it was definitely, he had to have known the results coming in. And I would say, you want to talk about it? You want to talk about what the results are going to be? Nope.
That's tough, though, because if you see your own parent pass late 40s, mm-hmm. you feel like you have this thing in your body that is ultimately a death sentence. Yet say this respectfully, we're all going to die at some point. But the problem with a chronic illness like MS, ALS, that sort of thing, Parkinson's even, is there's no cure. It's so much more real than I think in general.
He had such fear. His father went from a robust carpenter, man who could do anything, play guitar like a angel, to a man who became totally disabled, unable to do anything at all, so depressed that he didn't want to live, and die of a urinary tract infection in front of him. Lynn could not even go say goodbye to him when he died.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's part of it too, though, if you think about it, Donna. It's so many unresolved things. We're talking about how he's feeling, but I want to talk about how you're feeling during this time.
I knew it was coming. I knew he was going to get the news, and I knew he was not going to accept it. I knew his philosophy was, if I accept that I have MS, then I'm going to go be like my dad. And so I knew he was going to deny it, because for him, that would be a death sentence.
Yeah.
And I knew he was not going to accept it. And I knew that once he got the news, it was all going to be on me. And I was angry that it was going to be that way. And I was hurt because he didn't trust me. So I had all those emotions, and it hurt because I knew what was going to happen too. I knew he was probably going to progress pretty quickly if he did have disease like his father. I was hopeful that he wouldn't have the same kind of MS his dad had, and that there might be a chance he might not go that bad. But I knew that chances are he was going to be like his dad. So I had all these emotions going through, and I wanted to talk to him about it. I needed to talk to him about it. But Lynn was someone who withheld himself from me. He was so protective. He had been burned by his first wife a lot, and he didn't really trust. He didn't really open up. He kept everything inside. So I really didn't have the ability to talk to him at all. And I was angry and hurt and had all those emotions going on inside. So I really felt totally alone when I knew I was going to be handling this by myself when it came in.
Wow.
And the news came in while we were driving home. He had MS.
Wow. I'm going to take a break real quick because I think this is the right spot for it. And then we're going to come back because at the same time, and I want to ask you about the kind of a similar time frame, you get more care comes knocking at your door again. So we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
All right, everybody, we are back here with Donna Stagletter. Wow, there's a lot of care that has come upon you, and so we're at this point, your husband Lynn has been diagnosed with MS. Mm-hmm. That comes in when you're on your way back from your anniversary trip. You're still working full time.
Right.
And as Natalie said, you have, during this time as well, you've got another care that comes in for you, another care at layer episode. Right. Tell us a little bit about that. What's going on simultaneously?
Several years after Lynn was diagnosed, he had already developed quadriplegia by that point. He was unable to do anything for himself. He was had neurogenic bowel, bladder. He couldn't even move his hand to position in bed. So I was still working full time. I had a person who came in to take care of him during the day while I would go into work during the day. Well, my mother developed cancer. I was talking to her one day on the phone, and she happened to casually mention that some symptoms that she was having, and she had seen the doctor, and that she was expecting to get results back of a CT scan. And I said, "You got what? Your CT scan? I mean, you had what done?" And as she was describing what was going on, I said, "Send me that CT scan results that you were just telling me about." And I read it, and I said, I called the boys, my two brothers, and I said, "Mom's going in to hear these results on Monday. She's got cancer." And I said, "It's going to be bad news. And Larry, you need to be there with mom and dad when they get it."
So were you a long distance? So where'd your mom and dad live?
My mom and dad lived in Franklin County.
So, and you were up in Richmond at the time.
I was in Richmond, and I was at least, it takes me about 4 hours to get down there.
Yeah.
And my brother was the only person that was in 30 minutes close to him.
Gotcha.
I said, you need to be with them. And I need to be on the phone when they get the results. Because they're not going to understand what this is about. And I need to be able to be there to talk when they get it. Because I'm the only one that's going to understand what's going on. And you guys, this is what's going to happen, and this is what they're going to say. So between the point I got that information and before they got to the doctor's office, I got on the phone and called Nancy Cancer. I knew the person who was in charge there, the clinics, and I set up an appointment here with an oncologist and got everything set up because I was bringing her here. They had totally missed the diagnosis, her doctor down there. So I got someone set up here to see her and got plans for her to come here. So when they got on the phone, he gave her the diagnosis and said, "I'm sorry, I missed it." I thought to myself, "Yeah, you darn well did. And you should have done this a long time ago." He totally blew it. And he was saying, "Well, we'll get something set up at Roanoke for you to go see somebody." And I popped in. I said, "Nope." I said, "Y'all are coming to me." I said, "You need somebody who's going to help with the diagnosis and the interpretation and the care." I said, "Y'all are moving in with me."
So you didn't give your parents a choice. You were like, it was two for one, too, because it was your mom and your dad. Like, you're coming to live with me. Yeah. No questions asked. Good try.
That's it. Yep.
And Lynn is, you're working full time. Let's go here. And Lynn is completely immobile.
Yep.
You're okay.
Yep.
Just catching everybody up here that we got a lot going on. Okay.
Yep. He's in the bed next door and I have a spare room across the hall.
Well, how is work going? Are your supervisors, is everybody really understanding, "Oh, Donna's having a hard time. Let's give her a break"?
Well, No, they just go along with it. I just keep going, and I just don't tell them.
Okay.
Yeah, I tell my supervisor, hey, this is going on. I might be a little bit more out, but I'll get my work done.
Did you take intermittent FMLA by chance?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, because it's important. You worked in HR,
yes,
related
ma'am.
To from a training. Like, you were a trainer.
I was the director of employee relations. I wrote the policy.
Exactly. So I think this is important to understand. She knows the policies.
Yeah, I knew how it worked. I was the one that resolved the conflicts and did the complaints when they came in. Yeah. I knew it. Yeah. So I knew what rights I had.
Yeah.
Do you think at the time, though, and this is not, because this the reality is it doesn't matter. It could be VCU, it could be it's any employer in America, respectfully, because I think the employers that have caregiver benefits are typically by exception at this point. They are not common. Would you say that the hospital system had a good caregiver or a robust caregiver benefit or an environment or culture that allowed for people to be able to freely share that with flexibility and that sort of thing?
No. I was an exception. I was only allowed to do that because I did it. It was only because I was a director and I knew how to manage it.
Yeah.
No other employees would have been allowed to do that.
Yeah.
No, they were not open to a regular employee would never have been allowed to do what I did.
Yeah. And I think that's important too, Donna, because I feel the same way about myself in my position. Any other employee at the company I'd worked for would not have had that flexibility because we just didn't have it built. We didn't have it baked in. And Jay was fortunate because she owned her own business. And so her being the boss, now sometimes she had conflict with herself.
And we were a healthcare facility. It was important for everybody to be on work at the time they needed to be there. They didn't have that flexibility. They didn't have the staffing available for people to do what I did. Only management level people could have that flexibility. So regular staff wouldn't be able to do it. Only PR. They would have had to have gone PRN and been flexible to be able to do something like that. Now, we made accommodations for some to be able to do that flexibility. I helped people whenever I could. That was one of my other caregiver attachment roles. I was very active in helping employees whenever I could to make accommodations with family issues. I was very active and my staff was very active in doing that.
So your mom and dad move into your home.
They did.
You are working and carrying your butt off.
Yep. Yeah. My dad actually took care of my mom and I oversaw their care together. So whenever she'd have chemo, I would drive them downtown because of course he wouldn't know how to maneuver to get downtown. And I did all the interpretation. Yeah, I would go to all the doctor's appointments with them and I would be the medical person. I spoke medicine. Nobody else speaks medicine. So someone had to be there to interpret and decide what was going to be done. And so her portacath needed to be accessed, I would do the portacath access. You know, I would do the wound care stuff. So the big stuff I took care of, and otherwise my dad did stuff. And we handled it that way until she had surgery. Everything was good. Cancer was good. She went home for a period of time. And then when she came back for her follow-up, cancer was back and did chemo for one time. It knocked the heck out of her. And we all decided before she went back to the doctor's appointment for the second round of chemo, it was time to stop. And so we told the doctor at that point we weren't going to do any more. The doctor had come in to say, I don't want to do any more. So we were all in agreement for her to go home on hospice.
Wow.
So that's what happened. She went home on hospice. Lynn was in the hospital. I had called to talk to her about how she was doing. I could tell by the phone call, she was about to enter that stage where the cancer was going to block her intestine. And I called the rest of the family and said, if y'all want to have one last hurrah with mom before she gets bad, do it this weekend because she's about to have a blockage. And they did. They got all together, had a picnic. Mom was doing good. Sarah had told me, she said, mom had a really bad leg when we were down there. It was really dark. It looks really bad. And I'm assuming she was getting a blockage in one of her blood vessels at that time, because the next couple of days later, she fell. And when she did, she never woke up from that fall. I think she threw a clot at that point. And within 24 hours, she was dead.
Wow. You're a nurse and you're used to dealing. And I know that, you know, you were in administration for many years, many moons, but you still were direct. You seem very even keel. Did you ever have moments where you were just like, I am not going to be able to take this. I'm just going to walk out. I'm just going to go out and dissociate for a while, live in my best happy land.
I totally disassociated most of my life. That's God gave me a gift early on, and it was disassociation. I have the ability, the whole time I was taking care of Lynn, I went into a box. My emotions just went into a box. And it was the only way I managed. But most of the time I took care of Lynn, my emotions were in a box. And I didn't feel most of the time, because the whole time I was taking care of him, he could have died at any minute most of the time. He was so sick, I ran an ICU out of my house. He had pulmonary problems where he would throw pulmonary clots, and I would have to suction him immediately or he would stop breathing. His pressure was such, he was a quad, so his blood pressure could go up to 220 over 110. And it was dysreflexia. And I'd have stuff here where I'd have to bring his blood pressure down. Or he would have his blood pressure drop so low, 60 over 40, and I'd have to bring it back up. So he would, I had an ICU here.
Well, and here's a question though, Donna. I'm going to let JJ talk in a second because she tried to get in. It was super cute. Did you feel like a wife, like a daughter? Because I hear you very medically, the terminology and the description is so clinical. Do you feel like you just went into you put on your nursing caregiver hat with them, and that's why those emotions go into a box if you really think about it? Isn't that trained? It's almost like firefighters are trained not to run away from fire.
I became a first responder more than a wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was very little time that I became a wife. Once he became so sick, there was one time at night that I was a wife. And when I would feed him dinner, then I was a wife. Mm. Because then we'd watch TV together. And I got emotional with this, because after he died, I started bringing back my emotions and working on bringing back my emotions. But we watched TV together every night. And he had to learn to watch Hallmark movies with me.
Ah, I love that.
And he would watch Hallmark movies, and he got to learn to like them. And I'd feed him dinner, and we'd spend an hour watching Hallmark movies together. And that was our time together.
Oh, that's like the precious time.
Yeah, that was our time together. And that's the only time we had as husband and wife, because he couldn't hug me. We couldn't do anything because he couldn't touch, he was pretty isolated. We could talk, but most of the time I was busy. I worked from 7 o'clock in the morning to 2 a.m. every day. Wow. And I was only going out constantly. And, when I was sleeping, it was light sleep because I was always listening for him to need something.
I already have the feeling. I can already tell what JJ's about to ask.
I'm listening. I'm like, no, my question got answered. So,
well, no, but I'm thinking about Jay. I'm thinking about, she's like not sleeping, working 7 a.m. to 2 a.m. basically working all hours.
Yeah.
Are you taking care of yourself, Donna?
No, never. Yeah. I told my doctor, told me I had to quit work in 2018 or I was going to kill myself.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you quit?
Yeah.
Okay. Making sure. I was like, yes, that was the year.
Yeah. I retired in 2018.
Wow. Yeah. And but the reality is that you didn't retire. You stopped one job and you went whole hog more into the next.
Because COVID hit and I had no caregivers then.
Yeah.
There was nobody to hire.
Yeah. And that's, I think, we know how COVID affected the healthcare industry and all the workers that, mandated that to stay and had to do all kinds of things. But we also know that so many people became caregivers and started to self-identify as caregivers during COVID. And because people needed care, and that's when care, the word itself, in my opinion, really got popular.
Yeah.
The need for care. How do we care for one another? And different, using technology differently. And so there was the silver lining of the pandemic that allowed us to really start seeing the roles of family caregivers.
Yeah. Now for us, it didn't change life much. We were already isolated. I already ordered everything online.
Right.
I had my back of my house was a warehouse. I had a room that was dedicated to supplies because I couldn't run out. So I had a room full of supplies, catheter supplies, wound supplies. I had respiratory supplies. I had a warehouse. The delivery people came here almost every other day. So I had a house full of supplies. I had medical equipment for everything. When Lynn died, I got rid of $18,000 worth of supplies and equipment.
Wow. I want to say that in 2022, you talked about how, your dad moved in and he started developing congestive heart failure, mm-hmm. and he's 92. And he lives with you. You're still caring for him because your mom has passed. Your daughter is an RN, but she has special needs children. And I'm sure you probably help out a little here and there. And because why wouldn't you? You have a heart to care. And so life now is different. And you're right. He's mobile and he's active, but he has needs.
Yeah.
I like that he's a spry 92 year old.
Oh, he is very spry. Like this past week, he was in the hospital. Yeah, because he had a little episode of congestive heart failure. So, he has to go take care of him. But, I have caregivers to help me with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So my question, I guess, is Lynn passed. And at what point, have you emotionally, I know you've been this box. What has happened with you, Donna? I mean, what are the ramifications that have occurred because of caregiving? Like, where is Donna?
For the last 2 years since he's passed, Donna's been trying to come out. I've sought a counselor because I had to work on it. I had to learn how to come out of the box. I had a lot of anger because the last place where he was a patient essentially killed him because they didn't provide the right care for him. And they ignored everything I had to say about him and did not provide him the adequate care he should have had. So they caused his death early. And I've got them before the board. And so it's not totally over yet. But I needed a lot to deal with. So I've taken a course in post-traumatic stress syndrome. Mm-hmm. Because it's called Reboot, and they helped me a lot. I've taken Grief Share. I needed that. I'm taking it again because I still need to do it twice because that's helping me to bring out some grief that I still need to deal with. I've got a counselor. I have hired a personal trainer to help me deal with a lot of the physical things that I've got going on.
You weren't exercising when all this was going on?
Like you were. No, I didn't have any time.
I know. Absolutely.
I'm having a lot of medical appointments because I got a lot of medical conditions that are going on. I wasn't eating right. And because I wasn't eating right, I had a lot of food sensitivities. I no longer have any digestive enzymes at all in my body.
Wow, Donna.
And I'm having to help rebuild those digestive enzymes now.
Wow.
Starting from scratch. So I've had a lot of medical problems created as a result of the time I devoted to taking care of him instead of taking care of me.
Yeah. Donna, I know there are so many, and we're going to put these in the show notes because Donna has a lot of resources and comments on be prepared to conduct research. Doctors don't know everything. And this is true, guys. I'm going to tell you, there's a reason we went for a second opinion. Had we not gone for a second opinion and made our way to New York, our life would be very, very different.
Absolutely.
So second opinions are your friend and you're right.
Yes.
And you're right.
Yes.
But, Donna, I'm going to tell me about, and again, so many good nuggets in here. She's like, I'm going to tell you right now, there's at least 10 that she gave us. Tell me about healthcare to home care. Tell me about the website.
Yes. I created a website and it's an awesome resource. I really encourage people to look at it. One of my problems when Linda first got diagnosed was trying to find resources, trying to figure out what to do. You would think I would know, I'm an RN, but you don't. There's thousands of things and questions that you need to find out. Healthcare to Home Care is a website full of links to different resources. It's a way to link to different government resources, different community resources, just places that you can go to find answers to other things. But it's not just links. It's also, what do you do when you go home? From the point of discharge, how do you think about getting in the front door? How do you figure out what to do? What materials do you need to do to do wound care? Because when home health comes to your house, they don't tell you what to do anymore. They've got paperwork to fill out, so they don't teach you anything anymore.
Yeah.
They do nothing for you anymore. So it's how to do things and links to show you on YouTube how to get it done. Because you can find anything on YouTube anymore if you know what the words are. But you don't know what words are anymore.
That's true, Donna.
Yeah.
It's knowing the right words.
Right.
And we always say, I'm like, for caregivers, when you're searching for resources, put the word caregiver in there and you will be shocked at what comes up. But it's really hard because, Donna, there's so many things out there and it's hard to know what is a reliable resource. And I will tell you, when Donna and I met on the Caregivers Playbook, I went to her website, and Donna's website is on our resource list. So healthcare to home care or homecare.com is on our resource list on our website, along with others. But I grabbed so many great resources from her website to even add into our resource guide. And that's the thing, is what are reliable, reputable sites that give you good information to help you be successful.
And I've also added something new to it recently. We just upgraded. We just opened it back up this past week. It's a mission called Compassion Mission.
Yeah.
And that is to, I'm going to be sending it out to churches in the area. Healthcare is now sending everybody home.
Yeah.
They're sending everybody out before they're ready to heal. Churches usually know who those people are. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sending it out to churches and encouraging them to start compassion missions within their churches. And mm-hmm. what it is to teach them how to learn how to connect to people in their churches to help them find resources within their church to help people, to help them identify who needs a ride to doctor's appointments, how to connect them to just checking in on their congregation to see, are you okay? Are you doing all right? To even divorce families. Dads, do you need to learn how to cook because you now are broken, have a broken family?
Yeah.
Or caregivers, do you need a caregiver support group? And here's where you can find one. And how to set up those little congregational things that you need within your own church. And I've set up different little programs for them to follow. Here's how you set up these programs in your church, because you are the, you're in the new community. There are no communities anymore. There are single units now in families, and they don't have extended people to come help them. There are single family units. There are grandmas and grandpas in houses by themselves, and the kids have gone off somewhere. Kids today don't feel unified to come back to the families to take care of them. They've been taught to create boundaries and separate themselves from the families, to have boundaries to take care of their own children, their own careers, and they don't owe anything back to their grandparents or their parents. They don't come to them and take care of them.
And I'll say this, I'm like, girl, we could get on this train all day. All day.
Yes, we could.
I will say this. That's one of the reasons, like I said, we started Care Forward, is it really is strangers become neighbors, weaving kindness into the fabric of our community. There is nothing in our society that says you are required to care for your parents or you're required to care for your spouse. And, you know, divorce rates are high in people who have complex and chronic illnesses. You know, you have people who siblings that don't want to care for, you know, a parent, and that you've got a primary that does it all. And I think that's really important, that together it takes the village, and I always like to say in the village next door, to care for our community. And so I think, you know, I'm going to direct people, go to the website, go to Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver, pull our resource guide because it's got lots of good stuff. Go to Donna, go to healthcare2homecare.com, take a look at her resources as well, because here's the thing, you can never have too many.
No,
and we're all about co-opetition. We cooperate with all kinds of people, Donna. And
absolutely.
So I have no issue with saying we are not the sole source of all the knowledge, but we try really hard to give you as much as we can figure out.
Because connections.
Absolutely.
Connections.
So you know what, Donna, I'm going to do the last question. Jay, I'm going to let you take my last question since
you've been so excited.
You can take the last question.
Donna, what is your favorite guilty pleasure, the one thing that you do just for yourself?
Audiobooks.
What is it?
Ooh, audiobooks.
Oh, I like those.
Yes.
Okay, any particular genre?
Christian mysteries.
Ooh, unexpected. I was expecting Hallmark and a little bit of Julia Quinn.
I like mysteries. I like the whodunits.
Oh, so you must like do you like the Hallmark Mystery Channel? Hallmark, you can sponsor us because you know Hallmark is for caregivers. But yeah. Donna, do you like that? Do you subscribe? Because Hallmark Mysteries is a special subscription. Like I was joking that, you know, when MTV came out 40 years ago.
I don't watch television anymore because I don't sit down. But
I believe that.
Yeah. And hence the audiobook.
Yeah, exactly. I can use the audiobook while I'm doing other things. And I always have my phone on for audiobooks. And that's what I used to do with Lynn. You know, while I was busy doing things for him, I always listened to audiobooks and it would take me away. And
I love
those mysteries. And so a lot of times the Christian mysteries would have a little bit of the romance stuff into them too. And so it always just kind of fit that kind of combination. And so
I
just really love that. You know, I'd really get into some kind of good story and try to figure out, now, who was it that killed that person? I've always really liked a little bit of that police piece to things. I used to work a lot with the police department in my job because I did a lot of investigative work when I was working. I could really miss doing that investigative piece.
And so, you know, it makes perfect sense because if you think about it, medicine is a mystery. And when you're trying to figure out what's wrong with people, you are ruling out and ruling in.
But in foreign relations, I did all the investigations.
Ooh, so you are a mystery girl at heart. I think Donna's got her next chapter, literally, she's getting into mystery writing. I can totally feel it. This was so much fun, Donna. We could talk. We're going to be besties forever. And it's okay if you don't want to be JJ's best friend. I get it. There's only enough room for me. I take up a lot of space. But since it's JJ's birthday, I'll let her close us out for this one time out of 100 and some episodes. It's your birthday, Jay. And so you might as well thank everyone and close us out.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening to this episode with Donna Stagletter. And until we confess again, we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, friends, that's a wrap on this week's confession. Thank you so much for listening in on UK Health Radio. But before you go, please take a moment to leave us a review and tell your friends about the Confession Show. Don't forget, visit our website to sign up for our newsletter and connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, and Twitter. You'll also find the video recording of all our episodes on the Confessions website and our YouTube channel. We'll see you next Tuesday when we come together to confess again. Till then, take care of you.